the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back with another weekly look at the world of non-league football. What a week, what a look as well. FA Vars round, it's the first round this week, and Philonetz is here with his FA Vars Fact File hat on, detailing the debutants, the record breakers, and the, well, the downright bizarre. He is the man with the stats for every occasion. Those stats make for great stories, but my next guest and his club have more stories than most. They're the kind that make me love non-league too. Real football run by real football fans. Founded by a D-Day veteran who now aged 100, still plays a part in the club he formed 75 years ago. They have a new progressive manager who celebrates the club, celebrates the people and the ethos that surrounds them. Steve Scott is an enthusiastic young manager who has served his apprenticeship lower down the pyramid with great success, but he's got plans to continue the same at step four with Asheville FC. Two massive games ahead, he's neither fazed nor overconfident, but ready to enjoy being part of a club I think everybody will also want to be part of when they hear his sell. The Non-League Papers' Matt Badcock is our man in the know and in and around the week's news. There's FA Cup, there's FA Vars, there's managerial moves, club departures, and non-league making inroads at the highest level of the English game. It's all in a day's work for non-league's finest media gurus. Plenty to come then. Sit back, relax, and let's get matters underway. Quite why the FA persists in trying to confuse us all with variously named early rounds, I'll never know. But this weekend, the FA Vars reaches the first round proper. I'm not sure what was improper about the previous rounds, but enough about that. It's going to be a busy old weekend. I think 177 clubs have progressed from the matches played thus far, and 29 have been handed exemptions to come in at this round based on their success last year. Plenty to excite, plenty to amaze, and plenty of stats and facts to come from our very own man who always can. Yes, it's time to welcome back to the Non-League Football Show at FA Vars Fact File, Mr. Philonetz. Hello, Phil.
Hello, Tim. Hi, how are you, mate?
I mean, I'm just confused by the way things are named, but, you know, that may be, that's just me getting old, isn't it? your headline stats, Phil, they're always about the record breakers, and there's plenty of those again this weekend, especially, well, so many debutants still in the competition.
Yeah, so we're getting a lot of clubs still standing who are participating in the Vars for the very first time. I can reel them off for you so that you know they are. There's eight of them in total. So there's Wombwell Town, FC Hartlepool, a Sutton United that's based in Birmingham, Foley Mere, I think that's how you pronounce it, I'm not sure, Alscott Heath, Rayleigh Town, and then a new version of Windsor and Eton make up seven of them. And then the eighth one is Sturminster Newton United, who are involved in a tie with Okehampton Argyle, who were, I think, a debut club last season. Mm. And they both play at step six. So one of those two is guaranteed to take a step six club into the next round, along with several other ties, which guarantee the same.
And that's what's exciting about this competition is that every time that we speak about every round, there's always someone making history, but making memories and making legends of the people involved in their football clubs.
I think it's one of the beauties of the FA Vars, isn't it? We've talked about it before. I've labelled it the egalitarian cup competition because every club has as much chance to do it as well in it as any other, and each season, new clubs start driving their record books open and making progress further than they've done before. And it always seems to be a different set of clubs each season. And we're talking about their step six clubs, but half of them that are involved will be in ties where the winner will set or equal their best run that they've ever had.
Oh, plenty of history to be made. Just this round alone, then, with clubs progressing as far as they'd ever been before. And there's always excitement, isn't it? Like when a new player signs, you know, maybe ex-Premier League star signs for a non-league club, or a player that's been a legendary player sort of turns up either at your club or against your club. There's always excitement around that. And again, that's where the magic of the FA Vars comes about again. We've got four past winners heading into this first round proper this weekend.
Yes, so another nuance of the competition is that winners in the past actually start in the earliest rounds. We've got the most recent of those is Newport Pagnell Town, who won it just 3 years ago, I think now. I'm trying to remember. Yeah, 3 years. Mm-hmm. And they take on Milton Keynes Irish, a team that's only been involved 3 or 4 years themselves in the competition. And the other winners are involved clubs like Stansted and Arsley Town. They're all hosting clubs who are on record runs this season. So you've got the opposite ends of the spectrum taking place against each other in 2 or 3 games this round.
Yeah, and going as far as ever, going as far as their club's ever been before, is great. But again, I guess if you're a manager, if you're a player, it's the wins under your belt that's helped snowball success for the season. We often see those clubs then going on and doing well in the league. I think it's a whopping, 94 clubs began back in that first qualifying round and now find themselves 2 rounds in playing in this first round proper this weekend. But not all of those have 2 wins under their belts. In fact, not even all of them have even 1 win under their belt. One club started in the first qualifying round but actually get underway in this weekend's first round proper. Explain that, please, Phil.
Yeah, it's quite a distinct situation here with North Allerton Town, who started off in the first qualifying round, but their opponents were disqualified, so the game they played was voided, so it's not an official game. And then in the second qualifying round, their opponents withdrew from the competition, so they've managed to get through 2 rounds without officially having played a game, and they're due to play Campion AFC in this round. Well, I started due to probably allegedly due to play Campion AFC, but we shall see if they actually get to kick a ball this time.
And the quiz master in you, Phil, you noting this one down. Have you got a special little book that you've got just an extra special section at the back for the really tricky questions that you can throw in at a later date?
I'm not sure I do, no, but I just spot things as they happen. And, if I think it's a bit quirky, then I'll try and highlight it.
If quirky is what we love you for. Some clubs have been busier than others, of course. There's a number of ties that we've seen before, and surprisingly, a number of ties we actually saw last term as well.
Yeah, so four ties happened last season out of the 15 that are repeat ties. So they'll be clubs there looking to get instant revenge. Conversely, Thetford United have had to wait 21 years for the chance to avenge a heavy 5-0 defeat by Cornard United in the competition. So, yeah, some can get instant reprieve. Others have been, gnawing at the bit for some time to get a chance to get that revenge.
It's like Aesop's fables, isn't it? It's those stories of scorn and bitterness for these rerun FA Vars ties. Records, though, they're not just about the wins and defeats. You fancy an entertaining game with goals. Surely Bury's opposition this weekend are a good bet for some net bursting. They seem to be one club that's attracting goals.
Yes, so Bury's opponents are Chadderton. I think they're fellow North West County League opponents as well, doing very well, I think, at the top of the table or nearby. They've been involved in 3 cup games this season. The first one in the FA Cup, they were involved in an 8-goal match, which they unfortunately lost quite heavily. Then their first qualifying game in the Vars ended up with 10 goals being scored, so 2 more than in the FA Cup game where they won 7-3. And then in the second qualifying round, they went 2 goals even further, being involved in a game with 12 goals, winning that match 8-4, a bizarre scoreline. And what chance there being 14 goals in their next cup tie when they take on Bury, who are quite prolific in front of goal themselves.
So you can keep your Premier League commentaries and your this channel or that channel. You haven't got anybody like Phil Annetts and the stats that he's got at his fingertips on the tip of his tongue or somewhere in the dark recesses of that brain. What about you, Phil, though? I mean, there's plenty to choose from across the weekend. A number of games Friday this weekend, too. If Chatterton aren't on your list, where might you pop up?
Yeah, I do enjoy to go to games where potential cup set could happen and also where clubs have opportunities to create history for themselves. So I'm selected a match between Penn and Tyler's Green and Bedfont Sports, where the home side are one step lower than the away team. And also, this is the first time they've been playing in the first round of the FA Bar. So it's history for the club already, and maybe you get to see them create some more.
Yeah, excitement for everybody involved. Two clubs that I know very well, a number of people there, and I'm sure there'll be lots of preparations already underway for both the home side and away side there, and I'm sure you'll get a very warm welcome at Penn and Tyler's Green as well. Over 200 matches this weekend. We've covered a few of the facts and stats, but what are your other favourite stats that we really should be aware of this weekend?
Well, you know, I enjoy the wordplay ones and the opposition type stats that I do, but there's a couple of Barker ties which you might have spotted. So I thought you'd have picked them out for me. I'm trying to train you into this sort of thing. So Hucknall Town take on Ena Town. So that's one of them. And another H versus H in Halstead Town against Harston Town. So they're the Barker ties. There's also an ampersand derby, which I always like to spot. So Erith and Belvedere are taking on Wallingford and Cromar, my local club. So that should be a great day. And we talked about Chatterton scoring a lot of goals. In the last round, we had an interesting game for Clay Cross Town against Aylstone Park, where they scored more goals in the game than penalties in the shootout, and they scored seven goals in the shootout. The game actually ended 6-6, which is the very first time there's been a 6-6 scoreline in the FA Vars. So that's the most historic thing to have happened in the competition so far this season.
And I saw that come in. I saw your commentary on it as well. And one thing I haven't looked up yet is when those goals were scored, because I just wonder, was there somebody that got in their car too early and missed most of that action? There's always one, isn't it? You know, when you're at a game, he wants to get the bus early, and never quite understood it myself. But then that's why I'm normally the person locking up at the end of the evening. talking about locking up, Phil, before I let you go, please remind everybody where they can get the full lowdown on your great work, this and the other big FA Cup competitions.
Yeah, well, of course, they're all on Twitter. I run three accounts on there for the VARs. It's at FA VARs FactFile, and you can check my recent tweets to see facts and stats about all of the 100 or so games that are happening in that competition this weekend. And then for the other two National Cup competitions, you can see my facts and stats, previews and reviews at FA Cup FactFile and at FA Trophy Facts.
Fantastic stuff as ever, Phil. Thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show. We'll speak to you soon.
Good. Thanks a lot, Tim.
Now, let's stay with the FA Vars and a club not debuting the competition, but I'm pretty sure we've not had them on the show in the past 19 years or so. So a debutant to the Non-League Football Show. And what a story we've missed out on so far as well. Every week, I talk about non-league having the potential for thousands of Hollywood storylines, but this week we've got something special. A club started by a D-Day veteran on his return from the Second World War, and they're now playing in the highest level ever in the Northwest Counties League Division 1 South at Step 6. They even sound like a town straight out of a Marvel comic. Yes, Ashfield FC had a great FA Vars run last term, reaching the last 32. That was round 3, which gives them a bye into the first round proper this weekend. And that's just part of the story. It's a pleasure to welcome to the Non-League Football Show manager at Ashfield FC, Steve Scott. Welcome, Steve.
Oh, thanks very much for having us, Tim. Cheers.
Well, it's a pleasure to get you on. Now, I mentioned the club's run last term, but at the time, Gary Jones was in charge, and you originally came in as his number 2 in March and then took up the mantle in May on your own. But coming in, they'd had that great Vars run, but then there was a fixture backlog and a need, really, to get points on the board. I'd imagine it was quite a baptism of fire.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was. It was a victim of the elements, to be honest with you, Tim. The team last season had been on a pretty good run. And then kind of with the fixtures backlogged and they lost a couple of players. So they found certainly the second half of the season really tough. When I come on board to support Gary, who was absolutely superb and, you know, was brilliant with me from minute one. I think the first game I joined him, there were 10 games or 9 games to go, I think, and we were away against top of the league. But we must have done something right that day because we managed to win, and I think that kind of set us off. I think we got four wins and a draw out of the, or close to that anyway. I can't remember exactly now. A lot of times passing out of the 9 games remaining, but that was enough to kind of secure the club's future in the division. So yeah, it was kind of job done. But obviously, then with it, you know, when I have moving forward, and I've loved it since taking over. Gary decided he wanted to pursue other things, it put a lot of, you know, heart and soul into the club. And as a Nashville lad, he's, you know, had an unbelievable football career, professional career, and yeah, he's, I couldn't thank him enough for his support. But yeah, it was time for me to come in, and I've loved every minute of it so far. Yeah, it's been great.
And after that backlog of games last season, ironically this season, the run that has given you the exemptions in the FA Vars this time around, and you're now already halfway through your league campaign this season. You're currently fourth, and to be fair, most of those around you have played similar number of games as well. So is it nice to have those games under your belt so early on?
Yeah, absolutely it is. I think, you know, I'm always an advocate of get the points on the board whenever you can and let everybody else play catch-up. And I think we were victims of the catch-up last year. So I think, you know, probably being some smarter scheduling as well, whether that's by design, fault or design, I'm not too sure. But it's given us the opportunity to get a lot of games in. Not so many cup games in because of how well we did last year in the Vars. So we've managed to play some more league games. So yeah, it's been great for us to kind of get those games in. With that, kind of has not given me a huge amount of time, myself and Glyn Hurst, my assistant manager, not given us a huge amount of time to kind of implement what we want as a club. So we found some inconsistency early doors. I think there's probably 10 or 11 of our squad of around 21, 22 players who have never had Northwest County's experience before, never mind FA Vars experience. So it's been you know, a learning curve for them, a steep learning curve, as it is for us. But they've we are taking to the task well, and yeah, I've been really pleased with where we're at. And like, you know, you want to win every game, don't you? So sometimes I'm a little bit more critical of the boys and myself than perhaps on reflection I should be. But I think we're in a decent place, and certainly a solid you know, foundation for us to kick on from.
And I like the fact that you've served your apprenticeship anyway, haven't you? Because you're no stranger to management. You had great success with the now, what, FC Bootle, as they're now known.
That's right.
Taking them through, what, 3 divisions, was it? The West Cheshire League or two promotions?
That's right, yeah. So three divisions of the West Cheshire League. And obviously, we were just a grassroots Saturday morning team before that. So it was, and had been, the club had been there for some 20-odd years. And I started off playing there with my friends and some of my best friends who are still my best friends. And so we had some pretty kind of rapid success there, which was fantastic. And I loved that. But it was, you know, it was time for a new challenge. And of course, that's where I first come across Asheville in the West Cheshire League before Asheville had the promotion into the county. So built some good relationships there. And obviously it's come to fruition, for myself at the moment. Yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned that, you know, being with friends and that sort of thing, and you knew about Asheville. I'm assuming that the next club that you went to have the right vibe. What was it about Asheville that brought you there?
Yeah, you're exactly right, Tim. I think, you know, there's almost can be kind of a desperation to get an opportunity at a higher level. And I think I must be honest, I think I kind of almost felt that myself when I first left FC Bootle and kind of looking to pursue an opportunity. And I think once that didn't really come about, you know, actually all out was enforced, but a chance to step back and say, hey, if you're going to go back in somewhere, like you've got to go somewhere that's right for you. And going in your stripes again type of thing. I don't think anybody should be, you know, myself included. I felt like I'd earned the opportunity to go up, you know, into the Northwest Counties, but no club felt the same way. So, you know, but what I did have was a great relationship with Asheville, and just as it come about. And, it, you know, in truth, I guess I really like the club. I've always liked them. They're really great people. I would have preferred for them to not be in the situation they were last year because I wanted them to do well, apart from when my team was playing against them, of course. But the fact they weren't, it just kind of, the time was right for me to come in and to help and support the team. We didn't bring in no players or anything like that. It was purely just about kind of a fresh voice in the dressing room just to help. A lot, Gary and Ian White, who were in there last year, who were both absolutely top guys. And we managed to do that. And I think it just kind of felt like the right fit. For both of us. I mean, I'm over the other side of the water to Asheville. Asheville's based in Wallasey. I'm based in North Liverpool, but it's 20 minutes away for me. And I just love everything what they're about. And they're real honest, hardworking people. A brilliant club. The amount of work they do behind the scenes is just incredible. So that certainly resonates with me as someone who kind of was a bit of a, not a one-man band, but certainly felt like that at times, sometimes at my previous club. So, you know, again, that just helped with the matching of our clubs and why we were kind of aligned. So it was, once the opportunity was there, there wasn't anybody else, to be honest. It was always going to be them.
I'm glad you said that, because I mean, we're all about celebrating people. And I mentioned the formation of the club, founded by John Dennett, the MBE, and his wife Joyce, originally as a youth club on the Wirral, named after the road they lived on at the time. That's fantastic. Right. Story after story. It's a centenarian. That's the one. He's 100 years old. It was on the first New Year's Honours list for King Charles. Yeah, already I can see Netflix planning the series already.
Yeah.
But I sense, as you've mentioned there, I sense the club's run very much in his image by very similar people, doers doing it for the right things.
100%. I was very, very lucky enough to attend one of Mr. Dennett's official celebrations for his 100th birthday, which were at the club. I mean, the guy is, you know, he hasn't lost a step in that respect. He's quick-witted, he's smart, he's sharp. You know, he still loves his football. He watches. So John lives kind of within the grounds of the club, and he can still see all of our games, and he's always out of his window watching the game, as he will be on Saturday, you know, cheering the lads on. So it's a big responsibility to kind of to want to impress him, and you're absolutely right, kind of. It's all about kind of how we act and act in the right way to represent what he brought about. I mean, some of the pictures we had on his 100th birthday celebration, and like the original kit, he was telling us his wife knitted the kit. Like, it's just absolutely unbelievable, you know, like what they did. And he still had those pictures. It was just fantastic. And he kind of bleeds Asheville. And actually that's really then, you know, trickled down into everybody involved. And it's honestly, it's the easiest part of the job is being the manager of the club, because the support you get from everybody. You know, we don't have the most money. Certainly, we don't have the most money. We're trying to kind of get more professional. We're trying to bring in more sponsorship. We want people to come and watch our club. It's hugely important, you know, that the local community are invested in us and care about us. So we're trying to do all those things. But like I said, as the football manager, it's the easy part, because I just get to put a football team out there, and they just look after everything else for me. So it's fantastic. And credit to Mr. Dennett and to everybody kind of around the club, for, because that's not easy to do, coordinate and get that sense of feeling within a football club. But they certainly do have that, and that again why it's just such an easy choice for me to be here, you know.
Well, it sounds like you were an easy choice. I've seen you and heard you mention Renault in your interviews, Peter Reynolds, the German. Did you know how much did you know about him or know of him before you came to the club? And how does that dynamic work? Because it sounds like you've sold him to me already, and to listeners. We all want to be your manager now.
Yeah, yeah. Renault's, put it this way, I heard about him before I saw him. Tim, he's a massive character. And, you know, to tell you the truth, Pete's kind of taken a step back a little bit this year. because he's so keen and wanting to bring through, you know, other people at the club. So Phil Simmons, who's now playing, you know, a huge part in the club's youth development, and he's kind of stepping up in terms of the chairman role, as Ray Reed, who's an old friend of Renault's and an absolute stalwart around the club and chases you for money every 2 minutes for bonus balls and all things like this. Cuts the pitch, like marks the pitch, like just like these people just give up all so much time to do it. And Renault was at the forefront for that. I know the chief cheerleader, really, and he's a hard man to impress, put it that way. I asked him after one of the games, I've come in, I think it was the first game I'd lost, and sometimes you just need, everyone needs a little cuddle around the shoulder. Now and again, I said, oh, Renault, this, that, and that, what do you think? And he gave me a four-letter word that I won't repeat, but it pretty much put me in the replace. Oh, I better shape up quick. But I wouldn't have it any other way. He's a top fella. He believed in me when it was easier not to, and backed me. I'll never forget that. And of course, we'll always want to repay that to him and to the club as much as I can.
And it's nice to hear you appreciate that as well. I mean, you had a good win last weekend against New Mills in the league. And I watched your post-match, and when you mentioned, those number of lads that in your squad that had never played at this level before and how important that is. Your day job is in HR, I believe. I mean, how important are those skills that you've taken from work for you as a modern-day non-league football manager?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. Difficult, probably, one for me to answer, Tim. I don't want to, it's not that easy sometimes to self-reflect, isn't it? Ironically, for someone who works in HR. I'm not your X's and O's in terms of, I'm not an elite qualified football person, but I am, a quite well-qualified people person. I understand the game. I understand what it's about. I've played the game. Every level you've played the game, ultimately, if you understand people and understand dynamics and what it takes to kind of motivate people, then as long as you've got a sense and understanding and you surround yourself with great people. I mean, Glyn Hirst, who's my assistant manager, was a rival manager, actually, of mine for a number of years, but I hugely respected what his team's done. And Glyn's an ex-professional, ex-Berry, Barnsley, South Africa youth international. He still puts the ball in the net in the warm-ups as well. So he definitely knows the game, and he's a very different character to me. But I think between us, we're kind of building our relationship, and that relationship's developing as it is with our players. So I think kind of having the ability to do that and being honest and just saying, if we've made mistakes, we've got to own them as well. Because it's not, I can't point fingers at footballers making a mistake because nobody's perfect. But by the same token, even the top managers in the world make mistakes. So it's just about owning them, dealing with bumps in the road, moving forward quickly and kind of sticking together. And I think we are really trying to do that and impress that and raise the standards and expectations of our club. And I think if we continue doing what we're doing, there's no guarantee of anything, but I'll know whatever happens that we did it and did it for the right reasons in the right way, and I'm happy with that. And what will be from that. So I don't know if I've answered your question but I might have tried to avoid. The question.
You sounded like an HR manager there. But I'm a big believer that in people, you create your own luck, don't you? You create your own opportunities and that sort of thing. This weekend, FA Vars first round, Mask United. Yeah. Your visitors this weekend, Northern League Division 1, Step 5, a level above you. I think Ashfield's record attendance at the wonderfully named Ray Parker Stadium. We're in October, Ray Parker Jr. maybe. I think the record attendance, just over 300 people there. The average this season for Mask United is nearer 400. The scene set for a cup set of Hollywood proportions.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope you're right, and I might just play that back to the lads on Saturday in the dressing room. Team, you might have done it for me. Yeah, no, look, you might have. I think you said you heard my post match on Saturday, but huge respect for Mask. Obviously, they've been a club that's been up and down in terms of what's been going on there, but the fact that they're kind of still here and they're still fighting and they're back in the bars and doing all those things. I've got a huge amount of respect for them, as I would for any opponent we're playing. Certainly, you know, they're not going to be rubbish who we're playing in the first round of the bars. So we won't go into that game or many of the games in the bars as favourites, but that's according to who. You know what I mean? So what? Levels are just levels because the club's been there in the history, but that's not the people who are out on the pitch today, and that's the same for Asheville. You know, like, it's a game of football. It's an opportunity for us to go out there and apply ourselves and implement our plans, and if our plans are good enough, then, you know, we're in, and as long as we're matched in the right competition, then we've got a chance against anyone, and if we don't pull it off, I'll be looking at us. Did we do everything we did? You know, I guess what I'm saying is you just don't want to leave anything out there. If you've given your best, we'll see where we're at. We think we're a good team. We think we're a developing team. We think we're an improving squad and improving pretty rapidly. Whether we've improved quickly enough, well, we'll get one indicator of that on Saturday. But, you know, again, one result doesn't make a season, whether we win or we lose. So we'll kind of, we'll put it in its place. If we win, fantastic. You know, great next game to look for. If we don't, what could we have done better? How do we get up to that standard quick? You know, quickly keep doing what we're doing, or do we need to change anything? And we'll just take it for what it is. So yeah, it's a huge opportunity. Yeah, it is a chance of a cup set, as you said. But you know, I guess I don't see it like that. I just see it as the next team in front of us that we've got to go and beat. So let's go for it.
Just another team in front of you, a bit like that. What is it? The Cheshire Senior Cup coming up against Tranmere Rovers.
They're all right, aren't they? It might depend who they put out, Tim. I'm not going to lie. I might have to change my thoughts on that. I have got a mate who signed at Tranmere, and he's coming back from an injury. And I was speaking to him the other week, and I mentioned the game to him tentatively, thinking he was going to say I'm weeks away. But he sounded like he might be half fit for this game, so I'm a bit worried about that. But no, listen. You know what, to be honest, the club's 75th year. As we said before, Mr. Dennett, John Dennett's 100 this year. For a Wallasey-based football club, there couldn't be a better football match for the club to go to. You know, playing at Prenton Park against Tranmere Rovers, like the first team, whatever team they put out, it's classed as a first team game, isn't it? So it's a tribute really to kind of all the work that's gone in, and I'm just incredibly lucky and proud to you know, be able to take the team into that. And again, like we said, yeah, whoever it is, we'll be going to win, and if we don't, then fair enough, but we'll definitely be having a good go at it.
Well, I think if a club needs an ambassador, you're certainly the man to take them forward again. Steve Scott, it's been a pleasure to get you on the Non-League Football Show. There are so many stories. We probably could have spoken for hours, but maybe we'll have to come back to you and we'll get you on again very soon. Best of luck at the weekend. Best of luck against Tranmere. And we will speak to you again soon on the Non-League Football Show.
Brilliant. I'd love that. Tim, thanks very much for your time. And your show is fantastic. So, yeah, keep up the great work. Thank you.
It is once again the time of the week to head on over to Non-League Paper Towers. And welcome back once again to the Non-League Football Show. Editor-at-large at the Non-League Paper, Mr. Matt Badcock. Welcome back, Matt.
Hi, Tim. 2 weeks running, what a treat.
It is a treat. The sun's shining outside as well. I'm sure it's just because you're here with me, Matt. We're lucky, aren't we? We're lucky. We're involved in this game called Non-League. And we spoke last week about the FA Cup, and we were bigging up some of those games, and those games didn't disappoint, did they? And perhaps most notably, those that went to replays this week, probably, you know, they're certainly the last replays in the competition this season, and who knows, maybe even the last ever replays in the FA Cup. But what a set of replays they were.
They were unbelievable, yeah. We kind of didn't actually manage to get out to one of them. It was following closely on my phone on Tuesday night and stuff, and messaged with John Couch, my colleague, and yes, the goals were kind of flying in, and it was unbelievable. You know, you've got three National League sides exited in the competition, obviously Hartlepool to Brackley. You know, it's a great sort of upset in its own right. Brackley, of course, you know, been well used to doing this in the FA Cup over the years, haven't they? And seem to have a decent run all the all the time down there. But kind of the big ones were big sort of real big stories of the night were Gainsborough going to Boston and beating them 4-0, which was incredible. And then Hensford, step four, going up to Gateshead, who are flying high in the National League, and beating them 3-1, remarkable result. And then the quirk of it is that Hensford and Gainsborough play each other next in the first round, and probably before the games kicked off, you might be thinking that it'd be Gateshead v Boston in the first round, but no, the two underdogs have got through, and both will be thinking they can win that one and get into the second round as well, I'm sure. But incredible night really for the underdogs in the FA Cup on Tuesday.
Yeah, and that side just one of a number thrown up by the draw that came out this week as well. I mean, that massive local derby, Northampton Town against Kettering Town, that's one of three chosen for TV featuring non-league representatives. I think that's a Saturday evening game on BBC Two. Tamworth hosting Huddersfield Town on the Friday evening game. And the Monday entertainment, Cheshire United hosting Lincoln City. I think that game on ITV4. So good that non-league's got some decent representation for the wider world to see what non-league has to offer.
Yeah, definitely. It's great. The FA Cup first round weekend, as it's often is, we kicked off with a non-league side, and Tamworth, they're the great run a few years ago, didn't they, where they got to play Everton, I think, in the third round, and they've been on this incredible journey the last couple of years since Andy Peake's took over, when they were sort of struggling in at step three, and then back-to-back promotions, they're up in non-league's top flight now. They've got this huge game on live telly, and kind of hopefully get the weekend off to a fly from a non-league point of view. And there's Sutton and Birmingham are on Sunday as well, so there's another one in there as well, which is it's going to be a great weekend as it always is. But it's been such a all through, there's so many other ties as well that could have laid a claim to being picked as well. Look at Southend, Charlton as well, that would have been one as well. But it's going to be it's a fascinating draw, and I think one of the good things as well is seeing that Northampton Kettering is on, and kind of down the years it's often been TV picks have often only been when the non-league side are at home, but maybe there's been a sort of slight change in that. We sort of saw some of the results in recent years where non-league teams have gone to Football League clubs and won, and there will obviously be everybody hoping that can be the case for that one as well. And as you say, a big derby as well. I sort of saw the video of everyone in the clubhouse at Kettering celebrating when it came out, and it would be a big occasion for everybody involved. And the good thing as well is there's always there's a few non-league sides against each other as well, isn't there, which we said about Hensford Gainsborough, I think Harbour going down to Tonbridge Angels as well, so you sort of need those kind of games as well early on, all non-league sides to get in through, to give everyone as best chance as possible to get to the get further into the competition, hopefully to that holy grail of the third round. So Brackley, Braintree as well, that's another one. But it's going to be it seems to be a really good draw of so many interesting ties and great storylines everywhere. And as we always say, it's kind of someone out there is going to be the hero. The heroes, who's it going to be? And that's the exciting part about it.
Yeah, and we enjoy it. We enjoy people suddenly taking interest in the non-league game. But also it's good for the non-league game because it does broaden awareness of the quality, the players, the characters, and the passion that's around at non-league. So that's always a good thing. So a big thank you to the broadcasters to making sure that non-league is a front and centre of their coverage. This weekend though, it's the FA Vars. That's the focus, and as Phil Annetts has already explained to us, there's lots of games. The first round proper of the competition, over 200 clubs taking part from steps 5 and 6 this weekend. Inevitably, I guess that has an impact on league programmes though. So probably quite a headache for you guys at the non-league paper, trying to work out who's where, when, and how it's all going to slot together.
Yeah, it's always a bit of a jigsaw, as you say, especially around this time of year. Everyone's sort of bouncing in and out of league, cup, trophy, VARs, and but this is all part of the fun. And as you say, there's an awful lot of games in the VARs on Saturday, and it feels strange calling it the first round proper now, isn't it? We've also been a few rounds of it already, but it's obviously teams with better buys through to this stage, and there's still some more to come in the next round as well. But this is this is such a special competition, and Wembley is so far away at the moment, but will there be people out there that in a few months' time that we're going to be talking about? You know, most likely that, as I say, it's still some to come in the next round, but we could see someone coming from these rounds now and having a really long run, and as I say, sort of in a few months' time, interviewing them before they're walking out of Wembley, and what a prize that is. But lots of games. It's hard to pick a picture game out of it. We can only pick one picture game this week, unfortunately. So it's always an impossible task.
Okay, are you looking at the weather forecast then? Is that going to be the key swinger? You make sure that this game's definitely on for the picture.
Well, I thought I kind of felt like summer was back yesterday where I was. Sort of this felt like the temperature had jumped up again and the sun was out. So yeah, definitely hoping for no rain this weekend, and we can hopefully get as many games on as possible. I'm sure we will this week because we feel like we're really getting into the thicker part of the season now, where everybody's really up and running. Lots of teams, I know, sort of the ones who've been having great cup and trophy runs, possibly haven't played as many as others, but we're getting to that point where everyone's sort of played 10, 11 games, if not more, and we're right into the swing of this year now.
Yeah, well, you say that, and again, as we discussed last week, that means, the season and the impact on the cups, it means different things in different leagues and different divisions of the weather as well. The North West Counties League, they battled against the weather last year, and I think they have fixture backlogs as well, games being played after the season was due to end. They've now got three clubs in their Division Ones in the North and the South, who've already completed half of their league campaign this week. So I think is it 34 games they play in a league season? They're already on 17 games each, which is remarkable. And the balance of cup, league, home and away games, though, that always has an impact on the club's sustainability. And we talk about sustainability and the need for cash flow and that sort of thing. I was interested in seeing this week over at Non-League HQ, they revealed that there are actually three teams yet to even play a game at home in the league this season. You've got Tynmouth down in the South West Peninsula League, you've got Mangersfield United and Malmesbury Victoria of the Hellenic. The latter have got temporary ground share issues going on as well, so that maybe explains that one. And for those clubs, without having a home game in the league, that's going to affect, cash flow, getting fans to embrace the club, getting people to know, particularly if you've got further away days. We say every week it's not easy running a football club, but I mean, I don't know how you cope with this if you're a small town non-league football club chairman. These are the sort of problems that you'd only expect to read in textbooks.
Yeah, definitely a really sort of difficult situation from that point of view. And I think, we're talking about the weather a minute ago, and how often do we see it every season where, a club can kind of go for so long without a home game because of the weather. And as you say, the costs are still there and everything still needs to be paid out. So it is really hard. And, as we always, we sit and we talk about how much we love non-league football and going out to games, and that's what people do, but you kind of forget that the tangible part of that is actually paying money to go and watch it, and that money that goes through the turnstiles and how much of a difference it makes. And that's why, that's the part of non-league we sort of love, isn't it? Because your tenner or your 12 quid or whatever it is these days at different levels, that matters. Those every penny you're spending inside a ground mean something. You're not just anybody. If you go to a Premier League game and you decide to not go, that ticket will be taken by somebody else, won't it? Whereas at non-league, you really matter going through. Really difficult situation for those guys from the sounds of things. And as you say, there's the other side of it as well, as the kind of the connection with everybody and that sort of continuity of people going every other week and watching their local side. And hopefully can get back to it as soon as possible.
And I suppose, you know, well, when you do finally get a home game, then it's maybe it's almost like a family party. I mean, further up the pyramid, with the Melksham Town, they're in the South Southern League Division 1 South, so Step 4 in the Southern League. Melksham Town haven't played at home in the league since they had double home August Bank Holiday weekend. So they played on the Saturday and the Monday at home. That's the last time they played at home in the league this season. I think it was something like 52 days ago. Interestingly, they had no league games at all either in September because they had the great FA Cup and FA Trophy runs. Those games might have had bigger gates, maybe because of the competition, but they would have been share gates, so I guess that would have hit cash flow as well, probably for the club. This weekend, though, Melksham are at home, and they're at home to Bristol Manor Farm in the league. Now, I don't know how far abreast you are of the Southern League Division 1 South, Matt, but this week, Bristol Manor Farm are probably the sides to go and watch because the rarity of a home game for Melksham Town, if that wasn't enough to bring in the crowds, consider that their opponents, Bristol Manor Farm, have been involved in two games this week in the league that have provided 19 goals. So there was a 5-5 against Helston Athletic and then a 5-4 defeat midweek to Melbourne Town. What's the betting this one's going to be 0-0 this weekend?
Yeah, I was going to say, it's got 0-0 written all over it. And, you know, probably Bristol Manor Farm manager Lee Lashenko probably won't mind that if he kept a clean sheet, wouldn't he? But they've, you know, obviously had a great season last year, didn't they? And, almost got promoted. So, yeah, it's one of those. Definitely one for the, if you want to go out and watch an entertaining game and get along there. But I just think I rarely come across these sort of crazy games and I sort of go, I often feel like I'm at the 0-0 on a Tuesday night looking at my phone seeing other results coming and thinking, oh, I want to go there. So, lucky for the people who did because, as much as I can appreciate a 1-0 away win and a brilliant defensive display, it's nice to see the goals fly in as well, isn't it?
It is, but having reported once on a game that was, I think it was 3-1 in the 89th minute, and I had my report sorted in my head, and then it ended up 4-3. You have to start again when it's that late as a journalist.
Very stressful. I mean, well, one of my most recent ones was the National League South playoff semi-final between Chelmsford and Braintree, where Braintree were 2-0 up, sort of going into stoppage time, and I think my report was almost pretty much written just sort of kind of finishing it off and then Chelmsford sort of put one in. You think, oh, okay, well, I'll sort of have to just sort of drop that on the bottom of it. But then they go and score another one and it is kind of control, highlight everything and control A and delete and start again. Definitely see things differently as a when you're working as a journalist. Don't want too much excitement. 3-0 wins are kind of quite a preferred one. Not plenty to talk about, but all in the first half if possible.
Yeah, we don't need too many 0-0 reports where we're reporting about the clouds and the lovely smell of the aroma of the burger van. But there's always, this is why we love non-league though. There's always, you know, ups and downs, twists and turns. We're discussing, you know, cash flow, not having games at home, various other issues. It's easy to understand how clubs can end up heading towards crisis. Blyth Spartans perhaps one in the spotlight this week. Managerial changes recently, of course. I think they're now, 5 defeats on the bounce on the field. This week, I think Secretary Colin Blackett and General Manager Brian Turner have both resigned. Then the chairman's also announced the club's up for sale and it's also in advanced takeover talks. We said it before, but non-league probably has more drama than any of the TV soaps. I mean, we spoke about the broadcasters earlier on in the show. They need to come and look at non-league a lot closer.
Yeah, definitely. There's at least a few Netflix series in non-league, isn't there? And as you say, a difficult time at Blyth Spartans. I mean, sort of since the takeover's gone through, the fans have been asking quite a lot of questions and then maybe possibly not getting the answers they feel that they need. And, it's kind of coincided with a really sort of disappointing downturn in on field results as well. Obviously, relegation last year, struggling again. And, it seems quite a worrying time for such a sort of famous name, you know, the takeover with the incoming ownership and all the ownership that came in last year, and the relationship with the fans clearly is not there at the moment. And it's kind of watch to see what happens if something does end up going through and a takeover. But again, you know, it's the sort of what it means to people and what they put into it, and the part of their week and kind of how that's getting disrupted at the moment, because you know, it doesn't seem to be a happy place at all. So hopefully that can there can be something that comes out of it sooner rather than later for everybody concerned, particularly the fans who are you know, I think they've sort of boycotted one game so far. Now I think that was one of the statements, and you know, boycotts of games, I think, you know, so far there's been one boycott at the moment, but that's kind of where the fans are at the moment. And I think when the takeover happened, I think that our colleagues Mark Crowe has kind of wrote a piece saying, you know, actions will speak louder than words, as they do on all takeovers, and kind of see how things go, and this is where we are at the moment. So yeah, concerning time.
Nick, concerning time, and it just proves that the football's a very different beast from any other business, and probably any other sporting business as well, particularly and non-league, probably more so than even those higher up the pyramid. And that's also the case in terms of management, because we've seen that managerial merry-go-round in action once again. The big news, I guess, probably Darren Sahl parting company with Hartlepool United, as you said, with that FA Cup exit in the week to National North side Brackley Town. He's an experienced campaigner, but Lenny Lawrence is taking up the reins temporarily there. But I mean, for someone like him, it's a tough gig, isn't it, up there? But all those that have taken on the managerial role at Hartlepool United, they've found it stressful, I'd imagine.
Yeah, I think there's a stat that they're looking for their 11th manager since 2018. So that kind of shows you what's sort of the way it's been going in recent years, and kind of within that they have been promoted to the Football League, obviously under Dave Challoner, and then came back, and that's the thing, as we know with the National League, it's so hard to get out that when you get out, you've kind of got to make sure you stay out as much as you possibly can. And they've found it difficult since they've come back down, and it's a club that really does, you know, lots of managers will feel they can go in and have an impact because they know if you can go in there, what it can be. You know, the club's played obviously much higher up the ladder. And it's had some great, great moments in its history, but they're really sort of struggling at the moment. And it seems whoever's kind of going in there, it's not quite happening. And, you know, can it just be the managers each time? I don't know. See, Darren, his record, he's got Yeovil in the playoffs before, he got Woking in the playoffs, and obviously that didn't go great at the start of last season. But, you know, he's kind of, he's an experienced manager, and he's gone up there and it just hasn't worked out. And I think obviously that the game the other night, the defeat the other night, was obviously, you say, kind of the tipping point. So again, looking for a manager, but as we both know, there'll be plenty of people think, oh, I'd really like to get into that. That's a club I could get my teeth into if I could be the one who kind of gets it going again. You know, as Challoner did, and sure showed what a good manager he is that he'd take him up. But again, talking about Blythe being not a happy place at the moment, it seems Hartlepool's not as well either. And that's the challenge for whoever does go next, is to kind of turn that feeling around, go and have a massive impact and see where he can take you. But yeah, it's definitely not going to be easy.
Yeah, and certainly I don't think the end of Darren Sahl's managerial career, I'm sure he'll be much in demand as well. We also saw two other big names of non-league managers, certainly in and around the M25 anyway, big names, that they resigned this week. First, we saw Scott Harris leaving Kingstonian ahead of the weekend amidst much disquiet. Again, another club, but doesn't seem to be in the best of places off the field. And then over the weekend, we saw Craig Edwards leaving Chesson. Surely too much non-league knowledge in both of their cases that they're going to be idle for too long.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? You know, both, I can imagine, probably already fielding calls as well from clubs who sort of sounding them out, see what's going on. Obviously Craig managed Kingstonian in the past as well, didn't he? But you know, his record at Chesson kind of incredible from when he went in there and where they were kind of struggling step four, and he turned around and went to see them, saw their game in the Isthmian Premier sort of playoff semi-final a couple of years ago when they beat Bishop Stortford kind of against all the odds to get into the final, that they obviously went on and won promotion in the National League South, and obviously found it difficult the last couple of years. But yeah, you know, it's again, to clubs that people want to manage and managers that people want managing their club. So as we so often say, the merry-go-round just keeps on spinning.
It does keep on spinning, and again, showing how difficult it is to try and run a football club as well. Looking around at some other news, bad news for City of Liverpool FC this week. They'd hoped to obtain a new permanent home via a community asset transfer of a site at Rathbone Park, which is basically rejuvenating an existing sports pitch there. But Liverpool Council this week have rejected their bid to take over that green space, and the club are back looking for alternatives. Again, Matt, we talk all we like about how clubs should be sustainable, and they should do this, how they should be looking at this. But the need to build community facilities, et cetera, is all wonderful in theory. But in reality, it isn't easy. There's a very limited number of options as to where people can build grounds or build facilities, build hubs. And when you're a non-league club with limited resources, it's almost impossible.
Yeah, very difficult. And as you said, probably other local pressures as well that kind of don't come under the football banner in lots of different cases. But I think it's clubs will, you know, they'll see what it can be if they can get these things over the line. That's why they're worth pursuing, aren't they? Mm. And you know, I think about Maidstone kind of as one of the big sort of examples of. I remember talking to Jay Saunders, obviously manager at Tonbridge now, but when he kind of took over as manager many years ago, and the kind of club was sort of bouncing around different kind of places. But when they got back into Maidstone and had that central base right kind of in the centre of town, really, you know, the club kind of took off, the crowds took off, they were able to then use that momentum and win promotions, and have sort of kind of become, you know, the club that they are now because of that base. And that's what, you know, you see that all over, don't you, with you know, the opposite, when clubs have to kind of go away from their grounds and don't have that base and have to ground share, that can, how difficult it can be. But as you say, the other side of it is, if you can get in somewhere and have that as your home that you can then grow from, that is so huge and for so many clubs. You know, look at Truro now, and their crowds have kind of gone right up as well. And there's countless other examples. You know, what a big thing it can be.
And before I let you go, I suppose we should also mention the big news in football that broke this week as well. I mean, you and I often discuss, more off-air than on it, I guess, that the depth of non-league links in the senior national men's team. With Gareth Southgate outgoing, a non-English national taking over, you might have expected that those links might dwindle. But if anything, I think that Thomas Tuchel's appointment has led to a strengthening of the non-league nous in that England dressing room. I talk, of course, of his regular number two nowadays, Anthony Barry, becoming assistant manager in the England camp. I mean, his non-league grounding probably second to none in terms of managers that have made it to a higher level.
Yeah, he's been having an incredible post-playing career, isn't he? And, you know, and he's sort of had quite a few injuries in his career, and that's kind of sent him down the coaching route kind of possibly much earlier, but also found that had that real passion for it and also really good at it. You know, you can't kid footballers. They know someone who knows what they're talking about, and he clearly does because of the roles that he's having, as you say, now with England, but, you know, Chelsea, Bayern Munich. He's been involved in national setups with Roberto Martinez at Portugal, wasn't he, in Belgium. So, you know, he's really having an amazing career, and from you know, someone who's a, you know, very, very good player as well, very good midfielder, you know, brilliant on seeing him in the midfield. Kind of remember watching him at Fleetwood and Forest Green and Wrexham, and obviously some, you know, got a few other clubs as well, at Yeovil and Chester City and Accrington. So, you know, it's a really good career, but you know, his coaching career has kind of absolutely skyrocketed, and he's, you know, looking, you know, looking like he's one of the brightest kind of English coaches around at the moment. And it's hopefully great inspiration for other players who are playing and kind of go on that coaching journey. I know there's a whole other debate kind of going on now around kind of English coaches and that kind of system and the opportunities they're getting and the cost of badges and all that kind of stuff. But Anthony Barry can, and has been for a while now, he can be a real role model to people who maybe, you know, I think let's not kid ourselves, some people, they don't start out dreaming of playing, you know, non-league football. Do they want to kind of play at the kind of highest levels? And that obviously doesn't happen for many people at all. But and you know, again, it wouldn't happen for many coaches either. But it does give them that extra thing. You know, you can say, well, you can go on and really have a big impact in the game and coaching at kind of whatever level. And I see so many former players, non-league players now in really great roles coaching, who've kind of gone out, got their badges, and found that passion and sort of use that knowledge that they've got to channel it into a different side of the game as well. You know, I think about someone like Max Porter, who sort of plays so much in non-league, had success, played for England C, captaining a C many times as well. And, you know, he's now in the sort of Arsenal coaching setup. I think he does the under-19s there. I think Alan Birchall was there as well. He's obviously had a great non-league career. And, you know, they're kind of, these boys are kind of, I mean, days, you know, in great sort of, you know, full-time roles and having a big impact on the stars tomorrow and coaching the next generation as well, which is really exciting. But I saw a little bit with Anthony Barry on England's sort of media channels today, and he's saying it's one of the proudest days of his career because of what it means coming back and representing his country now as well. You know, and there's a lot of talk about trying to win the World Cup and all that kind of stuff. And we know that's not very easy, but he's now in a position where he must be thinking, yeah, flipping out, like, I've got a great opportunity here to be part of something and to help my country win the World Cup. And, you know, I imagine you've been thinking that a few years ago when he was sort of getting whacked around in midfield in non-league. And, yeah, just it just shows. And hopefully a great role model. I think it's a great story. And just shows what you can do.
Yeah, and I think it goes back, doesn't it? So we started about talking about FA Cup and you know, potential for cup sets. Yeah, whatever level you're playing at, football's just actually a fairly simple game, 11 against 11. And actually, I think that the number of people that have started in non-league, where we always say about it's about the people, whether that's on and off the field. I think the modern game's more about people and personalities, isn't it? And if you understand how to deal with people, you can go a long way.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's obviously a massive part of Anthony Barry's success as well. I think there's a story, isn't there, about how he, you know, on his coaching course, that he sort of first impressed sort of Frank Lampard, and that was where he analysed pretty much every throw in the Premier League or something like that, and sort of how that every throw in, you know, that sort of that detail that he was going on as part of his kind of dissertation. And, but I've also, yeah, I believe he's kind of done public speaking courses and things like that of how to get. You know, be a great communicator in the change room, and also on the where he earns his real money out on the training pitch, and getting those ideas across. And, you know, for players out there who are kind of thinking, well, my career is kind of coming to an end, and, you know, they want to go to that coaching, it is not just about, as you say, you know, what just setting up, putting cones out and kind of getting everyone to do it. It's how you communicate your ideas across, and your personality that comes across as well. And, you know, there's the story recently, wasn't there, of Andy Mangan. I know it's sort of not happened now, but he's still at Stockport, but there was kind of talk about him going to Real Madrid as part of Carlo Ancelotti's staff. And you know, anybody who's ever come across Andy Mangan, you know, does not forget it. Kind of the character and the bubbly personality that he is, and how he comes across and how he talks to you. And, you know, I can see exactly why people, you know, he's doing so well in coaching, because of the way he is and that personality that he has. And, yeah, that's why we love non-league, because we see so many of these personalities up close and get to know them. It's great.
And long may it continue, because it makes our job a lot easier. Talking about making our job easier, you've got, what, FA Vars action, FA Cup reaction, FA Trophy previews. You got any room in this weekend's paper?
There's not much, no. It is kind of that, especially when we've had so many FA Cup upsets in the week. We kind of started out plotting out who we might like to try and talk to, but we always wait to see what happens on the Tuesday night games if there are any upsets. So that sort of when there's three, that kind of that kind of changed everything. So we've had to push a few of the other pieces back for next week. Luckily, we've got another week in the middle before the FA Cup games as well. But yeah, of course, caught up with Steve King and Russ Wilcox at Hensford and Gainsborough ahead of their what's now going to be their big first round clash, and kind of interesting that they both sort of said the same thing, felt their chance had gone in that first game, but of players managed to pull off the unthinkable in their replay. So got that in there. A bit about Anthony Barry, obviously covering off Gateshead, pointing Carl Magne as their new manager, someone who obviously knows the club well from his playing days. He's come across from Carlisle, where he's on the coach and staff of former Gateshead manager Mike Williamson, so someone who knows that club really well. And so if they had a disappointing result the other night from their point of view against Hensford, to go in there and kind of continue that good work, but kind of get them back on track a little bit. Obviously after Rob Elliott left for Crawley, so we've got that in there. And as you say, back to some league action as well after the FA Cup last week. We've not or the National League having a week off from the league. We're back to that programme as well, and seeing who can get the points on the board at the weekend.
All we know is that we just got to pick up the non-league paper on Sunday. Matt Badcock, thanks as ever for all your help. We'll speak to you again soon.
Thanks, Tim.
And that then is it for this week. Well, it's not actually, because obviously I recorded just a little bit earlier with Matt Badcock earlier on that news roundup. As ever in the non-league game, things move very fast. We spoke about Scott Harris leaving before last weekend at Kingstonian as manager. Well, he's had less than a week away, and he's returned to Kingstonian. So, interesting times at Kingstonian there. He'll be back in charge, I believe, for this weekend's league campaign. We also mentioned the Blythe Spartan situation, general manager and secretary leaving this week. And then since we've heard that, due to those recent club resignations, Spartans currently do not have the capacity to meet the correct legal requirements to host Saturday's fixture against Gainsborough Trinity, and the game's been postponed. More to come, I'm sure, on that story. Don't forget to get involved on social media at Non-League Show, and myself there at Tim Fuel, FUELL. And as ever, you can find us every week on Audio Boom, on Apple Podcasts, but also Google Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, CastBox, iHeart, Geo7, Listen Notes, Overcast, Player FM, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, via your smart speakers, and all good podcast aggregation sites. Stay tuned. More news on some maybe returnees and additional pods coming very, very soon, and some new partnerships. Stay safe. Enjoy your football. Thank you and goodbye.